Major funding for Telehell is provided by Dave's Archives. At Dave's Archives, he personally transfers, archives, and preserves classic commercials from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s and shares them with you. Don't forget about his Friday night live stream on, well, guess when? Go to davesarchives.com. By RetroCirc on YouTube. RetroCirc has a whole new look and a new attitude as they bring retro commercials like never before. Always look for RetroCirc with a Q at the end. Bring your team with their team with RetroCirc, a Broadcast Plaza server partner. And by the very generous benefactors who grace us on our Patreon at patreon.com/telehellpodcast, including Ed Beatty Jr., Rhonda Farrell, Rick Kolacki Jr., Chris Michaud, Meredith Morrissey, Rabbites, Spare Parts, and Neil Weinstein. Thank you. Telehell, episode 100, God, the Devil, and Bob. Written by... oh, I think they know who I am by now. Okay, let's see. This is the 100th episode. Maybe start things off with a special introduction. I know. I'll string up a bunch of opening slugs that our announcer has said over the years. I mean, Mike Porter has been a part of the show since season 3. I gotta give him some props. So... open on a montage of Mike. Cue the entire theme song.
And now, because you were bad last week, and now, brace yourself. Hold on to your fireproof shoes. In spite of our better judgment. And now, nail down the furniture. And now, just to wake the neighbors, in spite of popular demand. Just because you didn't drink all of your milk. And now, don't fight it, folks. And now, whether you like it or not, just to shame the podcast streamers a little. And now, accept no substitutions. And now, how do I do this again? Ugh, here we go. And now, it sure beats going to the DMV. Unlike impacted wisdom teeth, this is kinda fun. You can't escape it. High in beta carotene. It could be worse. Don't touch that dial. It's where TV meets torture. Fun for the whole family. In stereo, where available. And now, it just never ends, does it? Made from meat byproducts. The podcast that listens back for external use only. Use as directed. Love it or shove it. Known to cause insanity in lab mice. It beats a hard kick in the face. It makes a nice sandwich. Available without a prescription. And now, made you look. If you don't listen, someone else will. This time, it's personal. Made from 100% recycled paper. 50% more than the generic brand. I've called this meeting to order. Lock it in and rip the knob off. Inspected for your safety by number 84. Of all the podcasts out there, this is one of them. Abandon all remote controls, ye who enter here. Who the hell am I anyway? And now, this is Telehell.
Okay, cool. That killed about 3 minutes. Now the subject. Let's see. I know the 100th show is a big deal, but even I know we're a small little indie show, so I don't want to get too carried away. What the hell. Let's just get into it. So here we are. 100 episodes of Telehell. approximately 894 Simpsons clips that I've used, and 112 times that I've digressed, but I digress. As we conclude our look at TV shows that use hell as our primary plot point, something else has occurred to me. After the previous 99 episodes worth of torture, and especially with the past two shows, that maybe, just maybe, the time has come for a little equal time. And cue the boss with a massive fireball entrance.
Whoa. What do you mean, equal time? I thought me and Ronnie Reagan got that shit abolished years ago.
I think you're confusing equal time with a fairness doctrine again.
Don't tell the people on the surface that. Somehow they think it's the same thing. But get this, I can digress too. Seriously though, what do you mean, equal time?
Well, I figured that after 100 shows, we've had more than our fair share of doom, gloom, fire, brimstone, and all the other stuff that maybe, just maybe, we can cover a show that actually mocks our opposition.
You do know where you work for all of eternity, right?
I'm aware, boss, and that's why I place strong emphasis on the words mocking the opposition. I figure there has to be a TV show out there that glorifies our side while at the same time is completely blasphemous to the other side. That way, we can have our cake and eat it too.
Interesting theory, but, and I'm only saying this next part out of caution, you better be careful which show you pick. Remember what I said a few weeks ago about balance in the universe? If you praise the opposition, even the slightest bit, who the here knows what'll happen? I mean, we just gave California several dozen feet of snow, which in normal circumstances would be seen as a catastrophe, except the opposition managed to spin that into the cure for their worst drought in years and record profits for the ski resorts in Squaw Valley. Ergo, balance.
Don't worry. I found the perfect show to mock. I'm just not sure if I can say the title out loud because, you know whose name is part of it.
Wanna whisper it to me first, just to be sure? Truth be told, I'd rather have the top billing. But yeah, you can go ahead. Just remember, watch what you say.
Boss disappears in another massive flare. And the narrator sheepishly introduces the subject. Okay, time to pull up the Wikipedia entries about this. For the record, I never liked using Wikipedia, but where else am I going to find links to verifiable information without paying for a subscription to NexusLexis? Let's see. God, the Devil, and Bob, created by... Okay, let's start there. This subject begins with a writer named Matthew Carlson. Still another in a long line of writer-producers who was responsible for his fair share of memorable TV shows and those that flew under the radar. One of his first big breaks he got as a writer was when in 1988, he was the executive story editor for the first two seasons of The Wonder Years. Should I put in a few bars of the Wonder Years theme? No. I'd probably get Zephyr copyrights on the YouTube simulcast if I did. I'm sure the audience knows it anyway. From there, Carlson would go on to create a couple one-season wonders, including 1992's Camp Wilder with a young Jay Moore, 1994's The Boys Are Back with Hal Linden, 1996's Townies with Molly Ringwald, and, most notably to that point, an American adaptation of British sitcom Men Behaving Badly, starring someone who should have been down here several times by now, Rob Schneider.
Sting! Der Stinglehofer! Making copies!
Should I really be making jokes at Rob Schneider's expense?
I mean, pretty much everybody has over the years, but even that seemed a little gratuitous. Note to self, edit that out when you can. Let's move on. All but one of those shows had critical acclaim, but very little ratings to back it up. Still though, Carlson was not to be deterred. Somewhere in between the end of Men Behaving Badly in 1997 and the year 2000, a revolution of sorts was taking place in prime time, one that we talked about a little while ago. You know what? I think we should throw in a flashback to... if I can find it... ah, the episode about David Spade's Sammy. It's a crutch, but at least it'll help with the context. Now, where did I put that ripple dissolve? Ah, here it is. The year was 1997. While The Simpsons hit its arguable creative peak, another show debuted that benefited from having that show as its lead-in. Because of that, and in spite of how low-key it was in comparison, King of the Hill set off a tsunami effect in the world of Hollywood. Now that Fox had two animated hits on its hands, some of the other networks were none too eager to try and get primetime tunes of their own. While at the same time, Fox realized that they had to prepare for a war that they didn't even know they were starting. So they too started to stockpile. And for every Futurama, Family Guy, and the PJs that Fox had at its disposal, the other networks either had shows that were critically acclaimed but would see a better life in cable reruns, or something that appealed to absolutely nobody. NBC was one of those networks. And by sheer coincidence, the two people that we just mentioned were in pretty good with the network by the turn of the century. Drake Sather earning his credibility as a durable writer-producer, and David Spade being the star of a popular sitcom that aired around this time. Oh, crap. That's all the context I had? All right, better add more. While so-called adult animation continued to be prosperous on networks like Fox, the WB, UPN, and even cable, other established networks felt that they were getting upstaged and wanted to grab a piece of the pie. And if those networks were Bugs Bunny, one network was clearly the Daffy Duck in the proceedings. I can come up with a better metaphor later.
Television.
The turn of the century was an interesting time for NBC. The network took a major hit in the ratings thanks to the end of Seinfeld in 1998, but the network wasn't down for the count. They still had their various other tentpoles like Friends, Frasier, and ER, but they also had reliable Clydesdales backing them up, like Will and Grace, Just Shoot Me, and News Radio. Still though, for a network that was fighting to remain number one for a few more years, they felt a little eager to want to be number one in all key demographics, not just the 18 to 49. So, upon seeing how great the lesser networks were doing with adult animation, NBC felt it needed to catch up. We mentioned Sammy already, but show of hands. How many of you out there remember a show that aired in the blink of an eye in the summer of 1998 called Stressed Eric? Nobody? Okay, quick tangent, because I vividly remember seeing this show. Stressed Eric was an animated series originally made for the BBC in the 90s, but proved to be so popular over there that NBC wanted to air it in the US, which was all fine and good, except they made one minor but noticeable change that may have been the reason why the show only lasted 3 years over there, but 3 episodes in the States. See if you can spot what that change is as we play for you what Eric sounded like in the UK.
Please don't let it be morning. Please don't let it be morning. Please don't let it be morning. Please don't let it be morning.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning.
Followed by what he sounded like in the US.
Please don't let it be morning. Please don't let it be morning. Please don't let it be morning. Please don't let it be morning.
Eric seems to have morphed into Frank Grimes all of a sudden, didn't he?
I live in a single room above a bowling alley and below another bowling alley.
Point is, Stressed Eric was only NBC's first animistake before the turn of the century. Sammy aired its 2 shows in August of 2000, only for the remaining unaired shows to finally see the light of day on YouTube just a few years ago. This show, the one we'll be talking about, aired somewhere right in the middle. The subject for this show was somewhat uncommon for TV, but it wasn't exactly unheard of for storytelling in general. It was your typical good guy versus bad guy fight using a random passerby as a mouthpiece. Hell, George Burns did 3 movies about it, so it wasn't exactly a brand new idea that Carlson had. But because this was to be an animated series, there was more licensing available to be creative with the concept, no matter how blasphemous the plot sounded. That being said, the story was this. Okay, more cutting and pasting from the Wikipedia entry. Hopefully they won't know the difference. And let me just proofread. The series was based on God and the Devil making a bet over the fate of the world. God wants to wipe humanity off the face of the planet and start over, but realizes that he's quote-unquote not that kind of God. He lets the devil choose one person to save humanity, and if that person does not prove that they've made the world a better place, God will destroy the world, okay? The devil chooses Bob Allman, a beer-drinking, porno-watching auto plant worker from the suburbs of Detroit. Should I do another Sammy Davis Jr. reference, or would that be too soon?
Hello, Detroit!
No. Come on. I gotta give the audience some breathing room. Anyway. The series revolves around Bob being God's go-to guy whenever he gets a great idea to help out the world. Okay, so far so good. Let's talk about the cast. To cast anyone to play parts like these is always going to be a tightrope to walk. Cast the wrong person, and protesters would probably come out of the woodwork. After all, if you want to cast somebody to play both the boss and the guy upstairs, you'd have to think back to all the times they were portrayed. On the upstairs side, they were played or voiced by the likes of the aforementioned George Burns, or Morgan Freeman, Alanis Morissette, Jamie Foxx, Harry Shearer, and Ken Jeong, among too many others. While on our side, the boss has been played by the likes of the aforementioned Christopher Lee, Peter Cook, Elizabeth Hurley, Robert De Niro, Max von Sydow, Gabriel Byrne, Tim Curry, Jack Nicholson, and of course, everybody's favorite Best Picture fumbler, Al Pacino.
And Maria is C. Oppenheimer. Yes. Yes, Emma Thomas, Charles Gordon.
In other words, it looks like I've been played by all the cool people.
Well, before you get too excited, having a famous person play you or the opposition is one thing, but it's another thing altogether when we're talking about just how that image of yourself is being presented. You know that song by, Joan Osborne?
The one where she calls you-know-who a slob like one of us?
The very same. Better not put in the actual song. Maybe the one that Dr. Evil did instead.
What if God was one of us? Blue, 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 blue.
Yeah, that should be fine. Moving on. Well, just as much as you can take many shapes and forms in a person's point of view, the same can be said about them. In any given person's eyes, they can be seen either as a random passerby, a common household pet, a tree, or even an oddly shaped stain in a window. Which I'm sure you've also done many times before.
Of course! Why else would I have taken the form of Christopher Lee, Liz Hurley, the serpent tempting Adam with an apple, or even the Wendy's Baconator to some vegans? You gotta appeal to everybody!
Which brings me to the people that they cast to play yourself and also your counterpart. And out of fairness, we're going to talk about the guy who played you first. What are your thoughts on this guy?
And I'm trying to fiddle the thing, and I hear him in this little choir boy voice going, "Oprah, may I have a photo with you? It would be my dream." Oprah went, "You got to get bigger dreams."
I don't know what it is about British people I find so endearing. I guess people really are attracted to the accent. But, yeah, Alan Cumming seems like a persona I'd take if I ever wanted to be less a harbinger of doom and more if I wanted to do some simple mischief. Yeah, sure, I'm okay with this.
Well, you say that now, but what if I were to tell you that the role of you was originally supposed to be played by Robert Downey Jr. before he got busted for going overboard with his then-frequent drug use?
Oh, fuck! I could have been played by Iron Man? Damn! I should have stopped his drug habits years earlier.
But if you did, he never would have played Iron Man as part of his career comeback. Classic paradox, I know. And to play the opposition, somebody who played his fair share of good guys, badasses, and in one memorable case, a combination of the two.
This is Jim Rockford. At the tone, leave your name and message. I'll get back to you.
James Garner may seem like an unorthodox choice to play somebody who is all things orthodox, but upon reading the character description of what the show's interpretation of the opposition would be, Garner gave in to temptation. For this interpretation would be, and I quote from the wiki, laid back, beer drinking, visually styled after Jerry Garcia from The Grateful Dead, but frequently seen socializing with his underworldly counterparts. You know, I think I'm just going to throw in a referee whistle just to have the boss come in and say...
Foul! 10-yard penalty! At best, we're work-related colleagues who've never even set foot into each other's workplaces, and we do all our communicating either through Zoom, email, fax machine, Morse code, semaphore flags, or smoke signals. Never once have they offered me a beer and chill at the end of the day.
Chalk it up to creative licensing, I guess. But that's nothing compared to how you're portrayed in the show.
What could be worse than a Jerry Garcia lookalike running the universe?
Ah, jeez, more wiki pilfering. Imagine how I am when I put in actual effort on these shows. Okay, let's see. He's a margarita drinker and drives a purple Dodge Charger, described by Bob as, quote, the coolest car he's ever seen, end quote. Despite appearances, the devil is needy and codependent, often reduced to tears when God ignores or forgets about him, to the point that he planned to go to war with heaven when God forgot their golf outing? Interesting. He also goes into vicious rants when he loses a game, and he influences people's souls from the age of 12 to 20. Well, that seems pretty debatable, I guess. I don't know. But just to be safe, let's throw in a little extra voice modulation for an angry boss who says...
Who the fuck wrote me this way? Needy and codependent? Reduced to tears when I lose? A purple Dodge Charger? Next thing you know, my character design depicts me as having short, bleach blonde Eminem hair, a goatee whose color doesn't match, and mildly sunburnt skin while wearing clothes straight out of an Urban Outfitters catalog.
Well...
Are you fucking serious? Trash this show, and trash it good, fuckbones.
Which is as good a time as any to say that we will do all of those things. Cue transitional flare to take us to commercial. Don't forget the voice filter so we can put it all together to say...
After the break.
And cut to commercial. Since this is our 100th episode, I'm going to let you in on a not-so-secret Easter egg. Almost all of the vintage commercials that we play at the halfway point have a connection to the subject that we cover in each episode. Go ahead, listen to them all again starting from Season 2. You've got time, I promise. For this occasion, however, I'm going to go ahead and play for you what I feel is my favorite TV promotional campaign of all time. It's about a minute long if you want to skip it when the static hits, and... I won't blame you if you do, but come on, give me a break. It's my show, it's my 100th episode, this is what I want to do. So, for the rest of you, please indulge me as I play for you now my all-time favorite local TV promo jingle. Hit it!
Experience Channel 2. We're there.
This week on Telehell's Premium Content of the Damned.
And also for space purposes, just be sure to send the Telehell audio as an MP3 instead of a wave, just because a wave I know is going to take forever.
Yeah, yeah, dude. You know, I do these every day. I know exactly. Trust
Fair enough.
Me. I got you.
Fair enough. Fair
I
enough.
Got you. I got you. Go ahead.
A couple other things in the script, anywhere where it says anything like sound effects or time codes, just allow for an extra 3-second pause just so I can pace everything. And sure. I've already recorded my stuff on a earlier date. Again, this is just so we can get your material and all that stuff. So sure. Not the entire script. When we get to like really big, long paragraph things, all I'm really going to do is wind you up from the last sentence and then
right,
we can take
right,
it from there.
Right. So.
The only way to listen to Telehell's premium content of The Damned is by becoming a patron at patreon.com/telehellpodcast. For just a few bucks a month, you can listen to our premium content and get some swag along the way. Once again, that's patreon.com/telehellpodcast. And now, back to this week's torture.
All right, back to the swing of things. So, my bones are getting so brittle at this age. Anyway, March 9th, 2000. The presidential primaries to replace the outgoing Bill Clinton were underway. Madonna tries to bastardize Don McLean's American Pie for herself. God, I can't believe she ever did a cover of that. What was she thinking? And at 8:30, 7:30 Central, a being who I'm just going to refer to for the rest of this as Jim Godford lays it all on the line, saving me a bunch of time in story recapping.
Hi, God here. So I was all set to destroy the world when I thought, hey, I'm not that kind of God. If just one soul could show me it's worth saving, I'd spare it. And being a sporting deity, I let the devil choose. So folks, meet your last chance for salvation.
Wow. This is good beer.
Oh, well, folks, I wouldn't make any long-term plans.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Anytime a title sequence tells you the story up front, it is a guaranteed time saver. Except this is the pilot episode, so we're pretty much going to be told the entire story from start to finish anyway, making this introduction equal parts pointless and irrelevant. Why not wait until the second episode to do all that? I mean, it's not like NBC expected the show to be canceled immediately upon air, right?
You see, there are some crybabies out there, religious types mostly, who might be offended. If you are one of them, I advise you to turn off your set now.
We'll get to that in a sec. Meanwhile, we begin by getting up close and personal with Hell's Branch Office in Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No!
Damn it, I used that joke a few days ago, too. What else can I try? How about this?
It could be worse, though. At least we're not Detroit. We're not Detroit.
I really need to see more of this country. Especially Detroit. Any city that gave the world Bill Bonds, Diana Lewis, Robbie Timmons, Ernie Harwell, and Detroit-style pizza can't be all bad. Let's see, now we're opening on Detroit, where Jim Godford seemingly shows up at random at a nearby auto show. Now, you would think that the public presence of such a being in the most random of places would be worthy of a reaction of ecumenical proportions. Fortunately, the showrunners thought ahead, but we'll get to that in a moment. In the meantime, we see the boss's millennial equivalent and the Godford files chatting it up while each of them both cause and prevent various moments of mischief in the background.
How are things in hell?
How are things in hell? It's a festering pit of agony and despair. Oh, I put in a koi pond.
Good for you.
They all died.
You check your filter?
I did everything the guy told. I can't keep fish.
Well, fish are hard. Get a parakeet. Nothing kills those things.
So you're telling me that you never had a casual walk-and-talk relationship with them upstairs?
Strictly professional. Just like any workplace, the only time we ever speak with the opposition is if there's some sort of clerical error that needs fixing, like a sinner that's up there by mistake, or a goody-two-shoes getting placed down here. The whole exchange process is like a prisoner swap, a hostage negotiation, or getting custody of a kid on the weekends, only with less tension.
So an exchange like this never takes place in the real world?
Nice place you've created here.
Yeah. Sometimes I think about chucking the whole thing and starting over.
I can't tell you how glad I am to hear you say that. I know it was hard, but I think it's the first step.
Maybe once, with Noah and the Ark. But if that were to happen again, that would mean about 8 billion people to process down here and up there instantly. Who has time or the manpower for that kind of paperwork?
Don't be discouraged. The Millennium is still young. And we also now need to meet the person who's responsible for the fate of the world hanging in the balance. Ladies and gentle demons, meet Bob.
Hey, Mike, pitch me a rivet.
No! Any idea where this came from?
Looks like a half-inch hex head. Most of those come from Pontiac, don't they, Mike?
Go ahead and have your fun, Almond. I know it was you. If I write you up one more time, your ass is mine.
Jack, I'm flattered. And, well, curious, of course.
Shut up and get back to work!
And in one of the few iotas of credit I'll actually give this show, the character of Bob is probably one of the most normal characters that I've ever seen French Stewart play throughout his career, partly because the animators drew Bob to look just like him. Now, I'm not saying that everybody he's ever played veered towards the negative side of things, because I do like a little abrasion in my comedy once in a while, but considering his range over the years...
Oh, I think you broke my mug, man. Oh, that was my Inspector Gadget mug.
I win everything. I don't lose. I win. Because I'm a winner. I'm a winner.
What have you accomplished since we got here? Well, you got a rat hole apartment, a used car, and you got lucky a few times. Now quit your bitching and get out of the kitchen.
Normal is a triumph. So now it's time for Bob to meet Jim Godford. And as is the case with meeting anybody otherworldly in any form of media, there's always going to be just a little bit of skepticism.
Did you see what I just saw?
What? Oh, pull your pants up, Ronnie.
So, God, what are you drinking?
Light beer.
Triple margarita on the rocks, no salt.
So now, with belief in the bag, we get a reminder of what the overall story of the show will be.
So what exactly is it that I'm supposed to do?
You don't know?
No.
Oh, for you people. This isn't new stuff. It's written down in books, scrolls, stone tablets. What do you want me to do, scribble it on a bar napkin for you?
No pressure, right? I mean, all that hangs in the balance is plant life, animal life, infrastructure, mobile communications, well, all of electricity, food supply, water supply, air supply, including the band of the same name, and, oh, I don't know.
All of humanity on planet Earth in general.
But don't be too worried about the outcome there, because this is an ongoing series, and that would be both too easy and too lazy to do. Not unlike our third wheel here, whose mundane existence may either save or doom us all.
You're on your own, Bob. Don't disappoint me.
Well, that's a little unfair.
You're preaching to the choir, my friend.
Act 2 shows us an artist's depiction of what life is like down here. And I almost kinda sorta feel bad for the estate of Guy Lombardo for being the victim of a cheap shot, but then again, this is a crass animated comedy from the turn of the century. Nothing sacred. As we meet a companion at the boss's side?
You're in an up mood.
I feel good, Smeg. I really do. The world will soon be ours. Well, mine. But you're free to wallow in my glory.
Thank you, your wretchedness.
Again!
Hmm.
If his nibs wants to hitch man's fate to this clown, Allman, I don't have to spread myself so thin. All I have to do is destroy Bob, and the world is destroyed with him. We have work to do, my loathsome toad.
Evil work?
No, knitting. Of course, evil work!
Okay, boss, have you ever had any annoying sycophants cling on your every word and assist in the world's destruction?
To quote Hank Scorpio, my ass is for sitting, not for kissing. Sure, the secretary handles all the clerical stuff, and some of the condemned have given me suggestions for ways to make the surface suffer, but, at the end of the day, I always go with my gut when laying the hammer down. Which reminds me... There. Just caused an earthquake in Turkey.
I dare ask what happens when you fart. Anyway, so now we get to meet Bob's family. It's your typical set of Dearborn suburbanites, including Bart Simpson using her normal voice to play a moody teenage daughter, Sneezer from Tiny Toon Adventures playing an innocent young son, and Bob's wife, a performer who got 100% robbed of an Oscar for her performance in Lady Bird. Yes, I'm still bitter about that.
You'll never guess who I ran into today.
You are not staying home on Monday.
I can't walk into that snake pit.
God Almighty.
You brought it on yourself, Megan.
The God Almighty.
I won't give them the satisfaction of showing up. I'm through with
Come
school.
Come back here. Megan!
He told me that the world is in big trouble, and he wants me
not
to...
Not now, Bob.
Don't worry, folks. I promise that Laurie Metcalf does say more interesting things throughout the series.
Donna, this is serious. God has literally put the fate of mankind in my hands.
And these would be the same hands that are inching up my nightie?
See, it escalates over time. You just gotta be patient, that's all. Of course, key members of his family don't believe Bob and or thinks that he had too much to drink. But even ye of little faith has to have a fighting chance.
Pop-Tarts, they're incredible. Pastry from a toaster, it's so convenient.
What? Are you just going to be able to appear in my house anytime you want? Because I think that you should know there are times that I'm naked.
You know what else I like? Space food sticks. Whatever happened to them?
Look, I think you made a mistake choosing me to save the world. I'm not the man for the job. I drink, I swear, I download porn off the internet. And I mean a lot.
Yeah, just like McDonald's. Billions and billions served.
Which circles us back to the point we were trying to make at the start of the show. How is it that you and the other guy can actually be on the surface only to not appear publicly except for a select handful? Well, here's the answer to half of that question.
Hi, Dad. Hi, God.
Darn it. I always have trouble with kids. A long time ago, Lucifer and I made a deal. I get them till they're 12, he gets them till they're 20.
Ugh, homework sucks. I need a beer.
No, not until you're 16. I see what you mean.
Okay, it has to be asked. Is any of that true? Oh, I gotta be careful here not to be too blasphemous. I mean, we're just a TV review show, and the hell stuff's just a gimmick. Well, when in doubt, aim for the middle of the road.
Depends on which book you follow. The idea of me having control over people during their teenage years sounds a little too New Testament to me. But back in the days of the Old Testament, people had to do some sick shit to get my attention regardless of their age. The more insane a task that sinners did, the lower their circle of hell would be once their time came. Those were simpler times.
God, I hope that's neutral enough. All right, back to the story. As Bob realizes the weight of his situation, he does what just about anybody who claims they saw our opposition does best.
I've done a little research, and apparently this is what we do. Gather a multitude and yell at them. I'm glad so many of you showed up.
Where's the free beer?
I'm offering you something better.
Salvation.
Is that a kind of beer?
No. No, no. I'm not offering any kind of liquor.
A perfect excuse to play this.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Or in this case, a lack of alcohol causing the problem. A problem that just magically goes away randomly at the start of Act 3, where we also start off on a throwaway gag that's either prophetic or just plain dumb luck, as Bob goes to a broadcast outlet known as the Blessed News Network, or BNN. And underneath its sign, it states, formerly UPN.
I am not doing another UPN November, no matter how many times you ask.
One viewing of Shasta McNasty is enough to last me more eternities than I can count.
A belated thank you for taking care of that one, by the way. Some tortures even I think are a little too much to take. All the more reason to foist them on an unsuspecting guinea pig.
Bob goes on the air to make the opposition's presence known, because, as they always say,
if they said it on television, it must be true.
What's your idea, son? Nutshell it for me.
Basically, tell stories about God.
Sort of a telethon for the Lord.
Exactly.
It's not bad. So, after they tell their stories, we flash a 900 number and the audience votes on the best story, $2 a call. We pull in a quick 10 million or so.
No, we don't charge any money.
Excuse me?
We just do it to show God how much we like him.
I could make a Pat Robertson joke, but I think he might be within earshot around here, so shh. Once that backfires, our much younger yet still 100% eternally non-aging boss offers up his own equal time to Bob.
A long, long time ago, we were both so young, I said some things. They got taken out of context. 5,000 years later, I'm the bad guy. Let me tell you, he's got some skeletons, but for some reason, he's always gotten better ink than me.
I can do things for you, Bob. Big things. There must be something you've always wanted.
I always wanted to play for the Red Wings.
You start for them tonight.
Your 3 o'clock is here.
Damn it, Smek! Close the door!
Sorry. What was that?
What was what?
I heard horrible screams.
No, you didn't.
But there was a...
No, there wasn't. Listen, you little worm. He's not the only one with power.
You better wise up fast and realize who your real friends are.
Now, I'd like to offer a point-by-point rebuttal of those 2 minutes, if I may.
Hey, it's my show, but it's your underworld. Take it away.
First of all, I haven't been around for 5,000 years. I've been here since the dawn of time, and so have they. That's several billions of years at the very least. Second, yes, we still do temptations for the most wayward of souls, but for fuck's sake, we have a budget. It's okay to aim a little higher than playing for the Detroit Red Wings. And third, if the guy upstairs can be wrathful and vengeful, then so can I. Passive aggressive is not my thing.
What about transforming into a dragon?
I only do that if you really piss me off.
Good to know. So now that Bob has heard it from both sides, that leaves him with some long overdue venting.
What do you want from me, God?
I had it! I really had it! You're supposed to be a benevolent God? Let's look at the record! You're vague! You're unknowable! You're unreliable! You let good people suffer, and lousy people prosper! You call yourself a father? You're more like a deadbeat dad!
What was that?
Nothing. Just an avalanche in Switzerland. Nothing to see here. Please, keep going.
Anyway, Bob will look for advice anywhere he can find it.
I just wish I had some sort of
What? A sign?
A sign would be nice.
Help me out.
Leave me alone.
Wait, it's you, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's you, right?
Right.
Oh, man, I'm sorry for those things I said out in the field. I was just blowing off steam. Look, I need your help. You never really told me what I was supposed to do to save humanity. What should I do?
Give me $5.
Oh, Bob. Have you learned nothing from Rachel Bloom via episode 6 of our show? Just because you do a pittance worth of good deeds,
it doesn't make you a good person.
I'm a good, such a good, real good person. I'm a good person, get it? Fuck you!
So, giving money to a random homeless guy isn't going to be enough to save the world. For as the old saying goes, real charity begins in the home.
You know, did it ever occur to you that the reason that we're such a big disappointment to you might be your fault? I mean, we were made in your image and likeness, weren't we?
You got that from him, didn't you?
Maybe.
Well, I got a million things to do.
Wait. God? Screw it. Let him destroy the world. I've had it.
Now what?
Nothing to worry about. Just an impending tsunami off the coast of Guam. Please continue.
So now, Bob is at the end of his rope, unsure of what to do. Hopefully a chat with his moody daughter will set things right.
What are we doing?
I'm taking you to the carousel.
What? Are you nuts?
But this always cheers you up.
When I was 7, I'm 13 years old.
Honey, it's okay. You don't have to... Oh, honey, what's wrong?
I haven't had my period.
Jesus H. Tap dancing Christ. How the hell am I supposed to respond to that? Should I make a Judy Blume joke? Or something from Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret? Maybe I'm overreacting. Let me see how the rest of the scene plays out.
But I thought you...
I lied about getting my period last year. All my friends had theirs, and I felt like a little girl.
So this thing with Dylan...
I made that up, too. Pretty lame, huh?
You know, girls mature at different ages, and there's no right age. There's a whole range from, from...
10.
From 10 all the way to...
16.
16, okay.
No, I want to be like all my friends.
Okay, let me think. I mean, clearly the guy is doing a good deed by bonding with his daughter through parental wisdom, so there's that. But all that period stuff... You know, the scene speaks for itself. Not everything needs a witty comeback, especially bodily stuff. And besides, we're on the last 2 minutes of the show anyway, so let's wrap this up.
You want to go home?
Not yet. I want to ride the froggy.
So Bob does his good deed to prove that humanity shouldn't go down the toilet. Or, at least, not on the first episode of an ongoing series.
Congratulations.
What?
You did it.
I saved the world? How?
I think you know.
What? You mean with Megan? But I didn't do anything. I mean, I tried, but that's what you want? You want us to try with our families?
This is good beer. Did you know the caps twist right off? What?
You're so... I don't know. Inscrutable.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
It's not fair! It's not! It's never an even playing field. I always get the short end. Just for once, I'd like to...
Go to hell.
Okay, you see that? I do not carry on like that when I lose. If I'm ever wrong about something, rare as that may be sometimes, I'll be the first to admit it, even if it is begrudgingly. But I don't whine, I don't piss, I don't bitch, I don't moan. I may be the father of all lies, but I still have two little somethings up my sleeve called integrity and professionalism, which is far more than I can say for this fucking poser trying to represent me.
Well, if you didn't like that, then you're definitely not going to like how you're represented in the remaining 12 episodes that followed this. Just to name a few examples, you threw quite the tantrum when the opposition forgot your birthday. We mentioned this before, but when they forgot to RSVP for a golf game. Wait, there was an episode where you caused chaos up there? I thought you said you never set foot up there before.
Hello, father of lies. It's literally printed on my business cards, and I can make shit up whenever it's convenient. Either way, I could have been represented a little better than this. Meanwhile, where's all the complaints that the high and mighty one looked like a laid-back, beer-swilling hippie? Where's the outrage there?
I'm getting there. In fact, smoke 'em if you got 'em, because this show has a lot of aftermath attached to it. So now, for the 100th time, let's go to the Nine Circles.
Limbo, lust, gluttony, greed, wrath, heresy, violence, fraud, treachery.
The death and afterlife of this show takes a pretty circuitous route. 13 episodes were produced, and in spite of actual critical acclaim the show got in the show got canceled anyway due to a combination of low ratings and everybody's favorite group of pearl clutchers.
There are some crybabies out there, religious types mostly, who might be offended.
This would include your typical garden variety Bible thumpers, right-wingers, the Parents Television Council, the American Family Association, and, probably safe to say, those who hail very deep south of the Mason-Dixon line. So much so that 17 NBC affiliates flat out refused to air the show, more than likely speeding up its cancellation in 2000 after 4 episodes, and at the very minimum offering wrath to the network. Now, you might think that this would also be the cue to ring the bell for Limbo, except this show went through an unusual case of resurrection. The year is 2005. The unqualified success of putting the first 3 seasons of Family Guy on DVD, leading to its own resurrection, gave those who had one-season wonders in prime time a chance to find a new audience all over again, and possibly seek resurrection for themselves on a TV schedule. For many, those second chances may have only resulted in a little extra profit for the studios, but probably only just enough for them to either break even or profit by a minuscule amount. And God, the Devil, and Bob was no exception when the complete series was released on DVD that year. In spite of the strong fan base it had buying them, there wouldn't be any more shows in spite of all 13 of them ultimately seeing the light of day. Not once, but twice. When in 2011, the show broadcast all 13 shows for those who didn't own DVD players on a little cable channel called Adult Swim. So, now that it avoids Limbo, we must resort to judging the show based on its content. And as long as the underworld is being represented thoroughly here by Alan Cumming, we can all but guarantee that heresy, fraud, treachery, in some episodes, some lust, and since this is a cartoon, some animated violence, not to mention numerous forms of temptation being made in 13 episodes, triggering potential sinners' reflexes for greed, and gluttony. But thanks to all the shows eventually seeing the light of day on DVD and on cable, this subject is now number 100 in a long line of shows that has seen its fair share of sins, and yet is still not enough to spring me out of here.
And I would not go holding your breath on that anytime soon.
God, the Devil, and Bob earns 8 out of 9 circles of telehell. And I...
Just a moment, fuck knuckles. This show is almost over, and I have yet to see anything big to mark the occasion.
Well, you're here. Isn't that big enough?
Like I said, my ass is for sitting, not for kissing. Though, thanks for the compliment. Flattery can get you most places. But seriously, you've done this shit 100 times. If not for me threatening to vaporize your soul, do it for the minuscule few who actually listen to your nonsense. Do something big for them for a change.
Damn it. Damn it, damn it, damn it. Shit, I've really painted myself into a corner here. I mean, I don't pull in Pod Save America-sized ratings, or make Conan O'Brien levels of money, or have the sponsorship roster of My Favorite Murder, or even had a full frontal lobotomy replaced with bubble wrap like Joe Rogan. I'm just a small, insignificant podcast that talks about bad TV shows with hell as the backdrop. What the hell can I do that's big, ultra-low budget, on incredibly short notice and not insult the intelligence of my listeners. God, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? Oh, what the hell? Let's just go for broke. A nervous but confident narrator steps up to the challenge by saying, "You want something big? I'll give it to you." Because here now, with an editorial reply to all the stuff that I just said, is God.
The fuck?
Hey, as long as we're invoking equal time, and as long as their name is in the title of the show, the very least I can do is offer them a chance to defend the show.
You can't just bring them here unannounced and uninvited. For fuck's sake, man, I don't even have my desk cleared off. It looks like I should be a guest on Hoarders.
Hey, nobody's perfect. Not even those made in one's image. Here they come.
You are so dead.
Joke's on you. I'm way ahead of you.
Even deader than that, dumbass.
And cue Joan in a new character, making her debut as Meriwether the Gatekeeper, who says...
Hi. Sorry I'm late.
Not to disappoint everybody, but I'm not actually the Almighty.
My name is Meriwether. I'm the gatekeeper upstairs, as well as His Holiness's spokesangel, head of public relations, and Squarespace webmaster.
Jeez, I forgot how hot it is down here.
Okay. Anyway, I've been asked by the Almighty to give the following statements in regards to the Condemned Souls review of a TV show called God, the Devil, and Bob. And I quote, "In regards to how both sides of the afterlife were represented on this show, we feel that those who pray and those who sin are free to interpret their maker and or the bringer of doom in whatever way they feel is worthy of interpretation. It doesn't matter if the Almighty is represented with either long flowing hair while wearing a robe or as a member of the Grateful Dead. It doesn't matter if my, that is, his counterpart looks like either a centaur with sharp horns and leather wings or a reject from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, as long as the message of the show is being presented in a clear and concise manner. And more so, if you find the program entertaining, all you really need to do is just watch the show and judge for yourself how blasphemous it may or may not be. Also, in regards to inviting certain members of our opposition to hang out for a couple of beers, we've made several hundred requests for such a meeting over the past 1,000 years, but they have since gone ignored. Nevertheless, we will keep inviting them until such a time comes when they, and only they, will agree to meet with us on a social basis without causing unneeded chaos in our wing of the afterlife. That will be all, and there will be no questions at this time. Thank you, and peace out."
Wait, that's all you were gonna say?
Hey, get back here! You owe me $500!
So, that was your big stunt? You tried to get God to do a cameo and then you couldn't?
It was the best I can do on short notice. Sorry.
You tried to get God. You tried to get them to come on this show? Holy shit! You have got balls! Oh, you are fucking crazy! Oh, that's... I can't stand it. Oh, that's rich!
Are you okay, boss? Does this mean I'm not in trouble?
Oh, listen, anybody who makes me laugh the way you just did, you're doing something right. I'm not gonna vaporize you, and you get to keep your job.
Whew. That's a relief. Well, then I guess I'm just gonna wrap up and...
Hold it! Hold it! I still gotta punish you for sending an unauthorized invitation to the opposition. But for making me laugh like that, I think I've got just the punishment for you.
Such as?
Spending the next 2 weeks in the clown wing of the gluttony circle. Knowing how much you love clowns, I think spending a little time with them is punishment enough. See you then, fuck nugget.
Hey! Hey, you ordered something made for the show! What else can I do? Don't leave me here with these freaks! I'd rather watch the Brady Bunch Hour again! Come on! I'll do better next time! Please! Please get me out of here!
Narrator struggles to survive the clown torture the boss has made for him. He's kicking, screaming, and writhing in fear as a bunch of clowns try to dogpile on top of the narrator. Fade out. The end. Okay, let's see. This is shit. I think I'm gonna step outside for once. Next time on Telehell. It's time once again to take a look at some attempted comedy pieces that make you question how you spend your time on the weekend.
It's the 20th anniversary season of Saturday Night Live. Great hosts, great music, big laughs all season long. Coming up, Marissa Tomei, Bonnie Raitt, John Travolta, Seal, Dana Carvey, Edie Brickell, Juliette Lewis, R.E.M., and next week, catch Steve Martin with musical guest Eric Clapton. The 20th anniversary season of Saturday Night Live premieres next week on NBC.
Until then, and for the 100th time...
If it's not in Telehell, it's not worth a damn.
The part of the boss was played by Darren Marlar, whose show Weird Darkness you can hear at WeirdDarkness.com or wherever you stream podcasts. The part of Meriwether the Gatekeeper was played by Joan Bishop. And thanks both of you, by the way. Telehell was written, produced, edited, and narrated by me, Justin Hart. All clips used in this program are protected under the Fair Use Doctrine of the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, and all clips used come courtesy of their respective companies and owners. Some of the music used in this program comes courtesy of YouTube and their audio library service. Telehell is a production of Horton Road and is distributed by Libsyn. You know that thing that people do in order to communicate with each other without actually having to look each other face to face? You know, social media? Well, we do that. Look for us on X, Facebook, and now Blue Sky. All three of them at Telehell Podcast. And don't forget to like, comment, rate, subscribe, and pretty much tell us what you think of our show everywhere that you can stream us. And also on our complaint line, telehellpodcast@gmail.com. Before we go, there's some thanks that I need to say because on an occasion like this, why not? This show would not have been possible were it not for all of you listening out there. And I know we make jokes about how small the audience is, and, you know, we're an independent podcast. It's pretty much part and parcel of it anyway. But it really is because of those who do listen to the show that we're able to keep doing the show and that we've been able to do this show for 100 shows. So first and foremost, before anything else, it is you, the listeners, who we thank the most for our success. Just as much as we thank our sponsors for our success. We thank Dave Zamora of Dave's Archives. I'm a little tongue-tied right now. We thank Yarnell Nicholas of Retro Cirque for being part of the show, and Yes, definitely. We thank the patrons, especially those that we thank at the beginning of the show, but all the patrons too, because were it not for you guys, we wouldn't be able to afford voice actors like Darren Marlar and Joan Bishop, who especially this season has made this show kind of pop a lot more than it should. Voice actors that we've had on in the past, including Rob Maurer and Suzanne Ventra and Adam Carrizales, Chad B. White, all the people that we find on Fiverr, that's all because of our patrons, so we thank everybody involved there. I want to thank my family, my mother, my father, my sister Babs, my brother from another mother, Ryan, and my niece and hellspawn in training, Evie, as well as a platoon of aunts and uncles on both sides of the family for making me who I am, and thank you very much. Thanks to the guests that have appeared on the show over the years. I have to single out just a few of them just because I know them personally, but Peter Melnick and Eddie Wilson of the Marvelists, thank you. Especially for being my first ever guests many years ago and getting the door open to have more guests on. And this guy I just met last year, and you know, even though it was just an interview, it still boggles my mind that I was able to book this guy. But thank you, Bill Oakley of the Steamed Ham Society, for being a guest and talking Simpsons with me. That's going to be something I'm never going to forget. Finally, on a very personal note, I began my radio and audio career 20 years ago this coming June, but I didn't start getting paid to do radio until December of 2005, when it was thanks to reconnecting with an old high school friend that she was able to get me an interview at a local radio station in the Catskill Mountains. And it was there, at that radio station, that I met somebody who not only showed me how things work, who not only taught me a lot about life outside of radio and the rest of the world, but she's probably the most responsible for my career than anything else I would ever accomplish on my own, even though she tells me all the time, you know, you've done a lot of great things. And she just sent me a note the other day on Facebook reminding me of all this stuff when I was feeling down. And for all of that stuff, I think of her as my indefatigable cheerleader. So thanks to Stacey Hammond for lighting the fuse, but especially to Annika Sonic for pretty much being a teacher that no school education could ever afford. You still teach me a lot of things every day, and I am so grateful that we have been friends now for 19 years. So thank you to both of you. Thank you to everybody else I've already thanked. And if I left anybody out, don't worry. We have a 5th anniversary coming up in July. I will be even more long-winded, more than likely. Our next show is in 2 weeks, if the good Lord willing and the creek don't rise. So thank you very much for listening. Here's to the next 100. Take care, everybody.